So at least in the EU, we're seeing some legislation for this. There's been some talk of legislation in the US, in Washington State, but that's not been fully pushed through or approved yet. So kind of curious to see what happens there. I think in the meantime, if municipalities have funding and are able to look at rerouting water, putting it through treatment systems, making sure that, okay, maybe we do have this field in place. How can we manage it so it's at least not harming salmon in the meantime? I think those are discussions that hopefully start to happen as a result of this study.
Absolutely. I think those were all the questions I had regarding the research study. If there's anything else, though, that we didn't touch on that you think people should know about, what would that be?
I think one common question that I get is I've talked a lot about stormwater and runoff coming off of these fields, but there's also a really large conversation around people who are playing and using these fields for sports. I talk specifically about 6-PDQ because it's the contaminant that's harmful to fish, but Tyre River contains a sweep of many, many different chemicals. This includes some heavy metals, some known carcinogens. So when we think about people playing on these fields and especially younger kids playing on these fields, it brings up a lot of questions about human health. So I think there's a lot more work to be done in terms of that exposure. I especially worry about young kids who might be crawling on these surfaces. Playgrounds also come up when playgrounds use recycled tire crumb as well. So yeah, I think that's a broader conversation that it's a little bit grim to think about, but also important.
Once again, that was our interview with Katie Maloney, an environmental engineering PhD student at UBC, on her research study that links water runoff from artificial turf fields to lethal chemical buildups in coho salmon. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. On winter holiday with her son in Cancun, writer Amy Nezukamatatil was in a bit of a funk. She was coming to terms with her first kid imminently leaving the nest to go off to college. This trip was where he wanted to go, a kind of high school graduation gift. But Amy, not so much. She's known for writing about nature and wonderment. And the most touristy part of Cancun was not her idea of a good time. But that first night there inspired this short poem.
My son reminds me he was listening all along. Just when I think there is so much I have yet to teach him before he flies off to college. Look up, he points from the balcony our first night in Cancun. A whole flock of magnificent frigate birds, night feeding, their white necks lit from the glow on Hotel Row.
Amy had always tried to instill a love of nature in her kids, taking them hiking or birding, teaching them the names of plants. On that balcony, she was moved by her teenage son's open wonderment.
It was so magical. I get teary-eyed thinking about it. Like, all the times he was rolling his eyes at me, he learned something to look up, you know, like, even when I was just disgusted, frustrated, like I wasn't where I wanted to be for the holidays, he kind of taught me a lesson, too.
This poem is in Amy's new book, Night Owl. Find a link at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mark Bramhill.
Was it the same place? Was Was it the same apartment? Was it the same bed? I've been rotting in.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
NBC. What does this mean? Well, this is the basic law. No, you cannot work a contract that dips you under the Employment Standards Act.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On March 26th, a workshop on workplace rights was hosted at Simon Fraser University by the Worker Solidarity Network. This workshop was hosted in collaboration with the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, SFU Labor Studies, and the Student Worker Center Initiative, which is something that is still currently being developed by SFU students. The Worker Solidarity Network is a labor advocacy group that provides educational resources and organizes campaigns for precarious and non-unionized workers throughout BC. CJSF attended the workshop, where the event's hosts Ismail Askin and Chris Castaños asked attendees to share their experiences of past employment and presented a dense package of facts regarding labor rights, everything from wage theft to community organizing around workplace rights. After the event, CJSF spoke with both Chris and Ismail and asked them why it was important for them to speak with students about labor rights in this context, and how this event came to be in the first place.
So my name is Ismail or Ishmael, and I am the Community Engagement and Campaign Coordinator with Workers Solidarity Network, as well as one of the legal advocates. So my role is to, well, engage community, join events, facilitate events, organize our various campaigns and plug community members into it, as well as supporting workers directly with their cases.
My name is Chris. I am the membership engagement coordinator and a legal advocate with the Workers Solidarity Network. And what that looks like is just bringing members and people together who care about worker justice, finding ways for them to connect and share stories and hold events together, and also provide, as a legal advocate, provide be a resource for workers who are seeking justice in their workplace.
Yeah, so the event was actually coordinated mostly by the students here at SFU who reached out to us expressing that they were interested in hosting a workshop as part of a process they have to try and set up a student worker center, try to kick it off and involve more students at SFU in both labor struggles and in learning about their rights as workers. So on the Worker Solidarity Network front, we can actually take very little credit because this was almost entirely organized and planned by SFU students. And our role was to basically be present and support their work by providing this workshop.
I think there's the section in the act where we talk about, in the presentation where we talk about who is represented or who is protected, especially in regards to migrant workers, international students. One thing we really like to emphasize is that all workers, regardless of status, are protected under the Employment Standards Act.
Yeah, so our website is very straightforward, just workersolidarity.ca. So if you even look up Worker Solidarity Network, BC, we're probably the top result on Google. And there, what students and workers can find is there is a form, a request support form that they can fill out where we'll just have a few questions around what their issue specifically is. If they fill out that form, then they will be able to book an appointment with us where, depending on what they're looking for, if you're a student and you're just looking for answers to some questions, then one of our legal advocates will get in touch with you, and that's all we'll do. We'll provide those answers. If you need further support, if you need perhaps someone to help you write a complaint to the Employment Standards Branch, or in some cases even represent you, we would also have that discussion, and we would never do anything without your explicit desire and consent. So if you're coming to us but you want to stay anonymous, you don't want to file a complaint, you just have questions, that's all we'll do. And then beyond that, on the About Us, you can find all of our emails, and you can get in touch with whoever you think is most appropriate. So if you have questions about becoming a member, you'll find Chris's email there. If you want to perhaps have us at an event or host an event together with us, you'll find my email there, and we are very friendly. You can just shoot us an email.
Despite the breadth of topics and issues that were discussed during the workshop, the Worker Solidarity Union was actually not able to get to every single point that they originally had planned for. According to Ismail and Chris, a part two of this workshop is currently in the works. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 17th to 21st, presented by Service Credit Union. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, art, and much more in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Joining Sled Island's previously announced guest curator, Clipping, is English chamber folk ensemble, Black Country New Road, revered Canadian pop project, Homeshake, renowned abstract rapper, Billy Woods, LA synth-punk's Sextile, fuzzy indie rock outfit, Feeble Little Horse, outlandish egg-punk group, Snooper, lo-fi post-punk duo, Sweeping Promises, New York City-based ambient pioneer, Laraji, genre-bending dream-pop artist, Salami Rose, Joe Lewis, and many more. Plus, there are over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
Yo, it's Eboshi.
Hey, this is Eboshi from Cartel Madras, and you're listening to CJSF.
I was on the back of your mind. I was on the back of your lap. You were in the back of the car. You were in the back of my heart. I was in the back of the bar. You know what I do, take things too far. Don't know where to start or begin. Don't know how it ends. Don't know how to say what I meant. Don't know how to say how I feel. Baby, is it real? I was like 34 double Ds. You know what I like. Ice cold.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, BC.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On Tuesday, March 24th, Burnaby City Councilor Allison Gu announced at a Burnaby City Council meeting that she would not be pursuing re-election for her position in the upcoming municipal election, meaning that her time on council will come to an end this October. Councillor Gu was first elected during a by-election in 2021 at the age of 24, during a time when there was not a member of council under the age of 55. During her announcement, she made reference to some of what she was most proud of achieving during her 5 years on council.
Some of the work I am most proud of includes the full decarbonization of all new housing, the protection of Caribou Heights Forest in full and in perpetuity, helping to get a city-owned, nonprofit, and nimble affordable housing developer, the BHA, off the ground and start its first two projects, working to build out a district energy system that will retrofit the city's biggest emitters, initiating a climate hazards mapping process, getting a bike learning zone started, and winning back public taxpayer funds from large polluters. I've also had the opportunity to make policy change, strengthening language to better protect tenants, securing more transparency and affordable housing, using density bonus policy to target the creation of affordable housing and childcare, amending bylaws to protect more green space, trees, and agricultural land, improving safety for pedestrians, cyclists, and public transit users throughout the city, and adding an equity lens to our transportation demand management strategy, and more.
Next, City Councilor Daniel Tatro gave some remarks about the announcement.
And I've been truly inspired not only by Allison's drive, but her vision to make Burnaby a better place. And, you know, again, just listen to all those things that contribute to that. She is principled. She's tough. You don't want to be on a Councilor Gu's bad side. She's tough, but fair. Very thoughtful on every decision made. Every decision that goes through council is carefully considered by Allison and or by Councillor Gu, and I know that. And if you talk to constituents around the city, she listens to everyone's concerns before making those decisions. I also think it's important to not forget how groundbreaking it was when Councillor Gu was elected at the young age of 24. At a time when I don't think there was anyone around this room elected who was under 55. This was important for young people in our city who sometimes maybe didn't see their voices represented. And I think it was inspiring too.
Councillors Saav Dhaliwal and Pietro Calandino, who have both served on Burnaby City Council since 2002, are also stepping down in October. They provided some comments of their own where they were complimentary of Councillor Gu's convictions, principles, and dedication to her role as Burnaby City Councillor. Councillor Richard T. Lee, who often disagreed with Councillor Gu during council meetings, had this to say as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I thought only old people of old age can be stubborn, but I appreciate the Councillor Gu make up her mind and didn't change too much. And I appreciate your passion to service and also your contributions to net zero, making Burnaby towards that goal closer. So I thank you very much for your services and good luck in your next endeavors.
Councillor Tatro then chimed in to disagree with those last remarks.
And the wrap-up, Councillor Tatro.
Yeah, just to clear it up, she's not that stubborn. You just have to have the right arguments to get her over to your side. So that's let the record show that Councillor Gu is not stubborn.
With Councillors Gu, Dhaliwal, and Calandino all stepping down in October, it leaves significant room for major changes to be made in Burnaby City Council in the upcoming municipal election. Additionally, as of this recording, Councillor Allison Gu has not publicly stated what her specific plans are once her role as Burnaby City Councillor is over. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. 5 years ago, a wildfire tore through Rebecca Gentry's Montana ranch, leaving tens of thousands of dead, scorched trees in its wake. In situations like this, landowners sometimes clean up pasture land by cutting the dead standing trees, piling them up, and burning them so they don't fall and hurt people or animals. But that releases the climate-warming CO2 the trees absorbed as they grew.
And that's what we want to help landowners avoid.
Grant Canary is CEO of the company Mass Reforestation, which worked with Gentry on a different solution. They dug a pit about 20 feet deep, buried millions of pounds of dead trees, and capped the vault with fabric, gravel, and soil. Then they replanted the ground above with native grasses for grazing cattle. Research shows that burying wood underground can slow its decomposition.
In the right conditions, the carbon is locked into the soil for hundreds, if not thousands, of years, taking advantage of all the hard work that the trees did over decades to remove that carbon from the atmosphere.
At the Montana Ranch, the vault will be closely monitored to ensure that it's locking away global warming emissions long term. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The beginning of March this year, the Vancouver Public Library announced its 2026 Indigenous Storyteller in Residence, Nishka Theatre Artist C. Peel. VPL's Indigenous Storyteller in Residence program was first developed in 2008 to highlight the importance of storytelling as a way to learn about and from Indigenous communities throughout Vancouver. C. Peel is an actor, director, writer, dancer, and producer who has worked in various art spaces throughout BC, including his work as the Indigenous Outreach Coordinator at the Kulch and his work as the Artistic Associate at the Carmen Arts Group. CJS have reached out to C. Peel to learn more about what he's working on for this residency, and during our conversation, we discuss some of what he hopes he's able to achieve as VPL's Indigenous Storyteller in Residence. In his own words, he hopes to destabilize the notion that people understand what Indigenous means.
It's already tricky enough to land opportunities as an Indigenous person, and it's tricky to find opportunities that allow for the dignified self-agency to determine what exactly the position can mean. It's tricky to find opportunities like that, meaning that a lot of opportunities will sort of have an often subconscious assumption of what indigeneity is, and that can sort of set the stage for a potential limiting on what the true possibilities are for Indigenous people to create art and to self-express, because there's this potential for the understanding to impair who gets selected, because you don't necessarily fit the understanding of what indigeneity is as opposed to what it can be.
This sentiment from C. Peel is something that can be seen throughout all of the programming and personal projects that he's working on during his time as the Indigenous Storyteller in Residence for the VPL. Specifically, one of the events that he is hosting is titled Pretendianism. Pretendianism is the term that has been given to a social phenomenon in which someone has publicly and falsely claimed indigenous identity, often for some form of personal gain. And we asked him why it was important for him to tackle that subject in particular.
What is our understanding of the word going into the conversation before we even start the conversation around indigeneity, pretendianism, opportunity, all of these big, enormous conversations before we even get there? Can we just sit with the curiosity towards what our current understanding is? Because to not do so sets the stage for the continuing reoccurrence of the phenomena. Not that it's going to stop the phenomena, but if we can carry an open-ended curiosity around why does this thing keep happening? I mean, we've got clear reasons, like I mentioned, it's the opportunity, it's the money, it's the acclaim, all of these benefits that can go along with landing a position in a prestigious organization, like not specifically that this has happened, but like a position like what you might find as the Indigenous Storyteller in Residence at the Vancouver Public Library, where it's well-funded, got access to the public, it's got access to all of this other stuff. I feel like it's so vitally important to not leave anything unsaid when it comes to these conversations, because it's not enough to just have a position available. It's also important in the conversation of decolonialism and re-indigenization and cultural evolution to be willing to sit with the discomfort that can come from a potential misstep in, oh, this institution hired somebody and it turns out they're not Indigenous. I think that a part of the journey needs to be, well, no, let's just unpack that. Let's talk this through. And before we even get to the point where it actually occurs, before we even get to that point, can we just sit down and talk about what this actually is?
One of the last things we spoke about with C. Peel was the personal project he's developing as part of his role as the Indigenous Storyteller in Residence. He gave us an in-depth overview of the project, explaining how it relates to many of the other questions that he is posing throughout this residency.
So a question that I've been sitting with that is at the heart of my personal project here at VPL, as well as it had been at the heart of a different project, so I'm looking to figure out how does the question manifest in a different form. But the question is, what comes to your mind when I say the word Indigenous? And how did that get there? How did that understanding get there in the first place? What set the stage for that understanding? The first iteration of the project was a dance theater piece that I developed in a residency with Raven Spirit Dance. They are an Indigenous dance company here in Vancouver. I spent about a year in a developmental residency where I worked alongside a mentor to work on a personal project. And that was 2024. I worked with Yvette Nolan, an Indigenous artist, fantastic, outstanding artist, really, really insightful. And in one of our conversations about the project and about the nature of it, she had said something that ended up becoming the title of that version of the piece, which was that a lot of the things that I'm sort of sitting with and unpacking with as an Indigenous person, these are the things that I cannot unknow. And so that became the title, The Things I Cannot Unknow.
To learn more about C. Peel's work and some of the events that are going to be hosted during his time as the Indigenous Storyteller in Residence at the Vancouver Public Library, you can go to vpl.ca/storyteller. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this piece on frequencynews.ca. You can also find our full-length interview with C. Peel on cjsf.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.